Welcome to another episode of Random Trek. I'm your host, Scott McNulty. On this podcast, I watch a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest today is Erica Ensign. Erica, thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you here. Now, I do know, since we've been on many episodes of The Incomparable together, that you are probably best known in fandom for your fandom of Doctor Who.
That is correct. I would say that of my many fandoms, and they are legion, Doctor Who is I guess, the primary one.
And you're on a Doctor Who podcast?
I am. It is called Verity, with an exclamation point. And it is myself and five other women talking about Doctor Who, four of us at any given time, and we're from all over the world, so it's kind of exciting to get the international perspective on episodes of Doctor Who.
And that podcast has been Hugo nominated, so congratulations about that.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, we're pretty honored.
You're also, that's not the only podcast you do. You are a podcast maven.
That's a word that's been thrown around a bit, yes.
So what other podcasts have people, based on just this 2 minutes of listening to Random Trek, if people already want to hear more of you, where would they go?
The other podcast, which is actually just getting started, so it's kind of a good time to jump on board, is the Audio Guide to Babylon 5, which I've started with my friends Chip and Shannon. And we are going all the way through Babylon 5 from the very beginning and talking about every story. And it's a podcast that's made for people who have either never seen it before or have seen the entire run or anything in between. We do half of an episode with no spoilers. And then it's not exactly a spoiler horn, but it's something, and let people know that they should jump off if they don't want any spoilers, and then we talk about the whole thing. And it's been really fun, and we've had some pretty good responses for only having, I think, 3 episodes out at this point.
Well, that's great. This is the point in the podcast which I should admit that I don't think I've ever seen a full episode of Babylon 5.
Well, if you decide you want to start watching it, it's a low time commitment because we only do one episode every other week.
Oh.
So, you know, 44-ish minutes of television every 2 weeks. That's low maintenance, I would say.
Well, maybe I've been meaning to get into Babylon 5, or at least give it a chance, because when it first came out, I may have watched like one episode or something, but it didn't speak to me.
Well, the very first episode of our podcast we did it's kind of a short one, and it's not talking about anything in particular. It's just an episode zero. So if you're curious and not sure if you want to jump in, maybe listen to that and see if what we like about it appeals to you and make your decision then.
Well, that's a good idea. All right. But we are not here to talk about Babylon 5 or Doctor Who, but rather
nope.
Star Trek. So where does Star Trek fit into your galaxy of fandom?
I would say Star Trek came in probably about as early as Doctor Who, if not somewhere in the same neighborhood. I was so young, I don't actually remember, because I started watching Star Trek with repeats of the classic series on television, and my parents were both sci-fi geeks, so that was a thing that was just on around the house. And one of my earliest memories of being in school was wandering around telling other children that I didn't have feelings and emotions. I was purely logical, which they did not understand at all. Yeah, I was a weird kid.
Well, don't worry. I'm a weird adult, so really, it doesn't really matter. So would you say your favorite Star Trek series then is in fact the original series, or one
I
of
probably
the other?
Would. I would not. I guess Next Gen probably is the one that I would say is the closest to my heart, because I mean, I was so little when I was watching the original series that it's wonderfully sweet to me, but I was at the right age to really kind of understand what I was watching when Next Generation came along. And, you know, I feel like I sort of grew up with that show at a time when I was able to grasp it a little better. So, plus Captain Picard. I love Patrick Stewart.
Well, that is a good reason to prefer the Next Generation over the original series. And I think I'm much in the same boat. I, of course, have seen the original series. I've seen all of the series, obviously. But I grew up, you know, Star Trek The Next Generation was new when I was really getting into science fiction. So it kind of became my Star Trek of choice. Although the original series, of course, you can't beat the original series for nostalgia and setting up the whole canon of the Star Trek universe, which it is fortuitous that we have randomly selected a very important episode for the canon of Star Trek. Which is called the original series episode, Errand of Mercy, which is from the first season, the 27th episode of that season. And this episode, fun fact, is the first episode with Klingons in it.
Or Klingons, or if Klingons. You pronounce it
exactly.
Like George Takei.
There's a lot of, they haven't locked down the pronunciation of the Klingon words yet, and they also haven't decided if it is Vulcan or Vulcanian. Luckily, they picked Vulcan, I think, because Vulcanian, while both words, yes, are a little ridiculous, Vulcanian is more ridiculous. And maybe they wanted a, Vulcan is a god, so maybe they didn't want to go with that, but... Vulcanian sounds too much like volcano to me, but that's another story entirely. So we start off the episode with the little teaser that they always do, and we find out that the Starfleet is on the brink of war with the Klingon Empire.
Yeah, it's like they really jump in with the exposition. It just hit you hard right at the beginning.
They don't have a lot of time. They need to just set this up. All right, we're at war, maybe. And one thing that I noticed as soon as they open, there is this guy who is not, you know, he's just an extra in the background, but he's wearing the weirdest blue jumpsuit I have ever seen. And I just thought it was odd. I don't know why that stuck out to me, but it did. And then he's back at the end of the episode as well. So clearly he's doing something very important on the bridge in his little blue jumpsuit. But I don't know what it is. But
now I'm sad that I didn't notice that. I've watched this episode, I don't know, four times in the last 2 or 3 months. And I never noticed that guy.
I must have seen this episode, I don't know, countless times before. But I was watching it yesterday. And that's the first thing. I mean, he's right in the first shot. There he is. And it just leapt out at me. I don't know why. It's kind of weird. But we probably spent more time on this guy than has ever been spent in Star Trek history. But I want to know his story. So maybe there'll be a spinoff of...
I bet there's fanfic about him already.
There probably is. So yes, we find out that the Enterprise is on its way to this planet, Organia, I think is how it's said.
Yep.
Because it is located right between the Klingon Empire and the Federation, and they need to get it because they don't want the Klingons to have it, basically. And I guess they want to use it maybe as a forward base of operations, and the Klingons probably have the same idea. So they're on their way to help when suddenly, and this is, they're packing a lot in like 3 minutes, they're attacked. They don't never say who attacks them, but we can assume that it is the Klingons. And you may be worried, but no, they readily dispatch the threat and they are destroyed. And then, war is declared.
So much happens in this cold open.
I know, it is craziness. And so everybody is upset about that. And Captain Kirk says, we've got to get to Organia before the hammer falls.
Yep. And I love how he too is just like, you know, we didn't want it, but we've got it. And then, of course, Spock is all quippy, you know, curious how often you humans manage to obtain that which you do not want. Like, yeah, stick it to him.
And this is this also establishes, it introduces the Klingons, obviously, but it also establishes, for no reason, really, that's given Kirk's intense hatred of Klingons.
Right.
I guess he's not, I mean, there are warlike people, but... he calls himself a warrior later, which I also thought was an odd thing, but we can get to that. And so, credits roll. We're back in orbit before Kirk and Spock. So this is a strange thing that I wanted to talk about. So they're going to beam down to this planet and, I guess, offer the protection of the Federation so that the Klingons can't get the planet. So you think, well, they'll send a landing party, especially since... the Klingons perhaps are en route to this planet and there's a war going on, so you don't just want your captain to beam down to a random planet. But no, it's just him, Captain Kirk, and Spock are the two people that are going. Everybody else stays
no
on the
backup
ship.
Whatsoever. I mean, I'm okay with Captain Kirk going down because it's a semi-first contact situation and maybe, you know, they need somebody in a position of power to do the negotiating. Although later on, he actually does say, I'm a soldier, not a negotiator.
He does.
So there goes that argument. But the fact that they don't bring anybody with them is truly baffling to me.
You think they would bring a couple of red shirts, maybe, just in case? Maybe Dr. McCoy, who does not appear in this episode at all, just in case there's some sort of medical emergency. But no, just Spock and Kirk. But before Kirk beams down, he leaves Sulu in charge, which is another first in this episode that this is the first time that Sulu is seen in the command chair, I believe, in the original series. And Kirk gives him explicit orders to not engage the enemy if they show up, but to leave and rendezvous with the fleet and bring the whole Starfleet, or I guess it's not the whole, all of Starfleet, but the fleet that is nearby, to the planet if the Klingons show up. And Sulu's like, okay, I'll do that. And then they beam down into a weird scene in that they beam down to this courtyard that is seemingly empty, but the second they materialize, 18 million people appear.
Yep.
Which I know was probably because the special effect is difficult to do with people milling about in the background. But it was just an odd moment.
Either that or maybe it's foreshadowing for what we find out later about what these people actually are. There's no need for them to be there until they have guests.
I hadn't even thought of that. That is a very astute observation.
Why, thank you.
You're welcome. And so nobody cares that these two dudes randomly appeared in their courtyard. And it seems like they don't. The Spock shares a little bit of what they know about this planet, but they don't really know a lot. And it seems to be first contact. These people, it is assumed, have a primitive culture, and they've never left their planet. So this will be, as you said earlier, first contact. And in violation of really the prime directive, this whole episode is...
Oh, good grief. Yeah. Later on, we get the line, we can remake your planet. So,
That's cool, right? Mm-hmm. It's just sitting here not doing anything. So my point being that these people should freak out a little bit that two random people have materialized, seemingly by magic, but they don't care. And which Spock and Kirk are a little surprised by as well. Mm-hmm. But they, this dude appears, and what is his name?
Aelborn.
Aelborn, yes.
Yes.
And he welcomes them to the planet and says, what's up?
And he also seems very unsurprised. Like, oh, you're our visitors.
He does. Welcome. He's very welcoming, but he doesn't really ask any questions except, you know, how can we help you? To which Kirk says, I need to speak to someone in authority. And then he has a weird answer, which is, there is no one in authority, but I am on the Council of Elders. I'm the head of the Council of Elders.
Yeah, it's like, that sounds like authority to me, so...
Yeah, that seems like you're the person I want to talk to. Unless the Council of Elders is just an excuse for old dudes to sit in a room together.
Old white dudes. Lots of old white dudes in this episode.
There are many old white dudes. This whole episode is pretty much white dudes of varying ages.
Some in blackface.
Some in blackface, it's true. There are no women.
There are, I think, two or three women in the courtyard scene just in the background. One of them had a very pretty dress, which I noticed. Uh-huh. And then we get Uhura, and there you go. One random red dress on the bridge as well.
And Uhura gets us, she actually says something at the beginning about the war being declared, and then that's it for her. So... Hooray for the 60s.
Well said.
Yeah. And then, so they go to the council, who apparently have no authority over anything. And Kirk says, the Klingons are coming. The Klingons are coming. We need to protect you because the Klingons are coming. And they're going to destroy your planet. The council says, we know about the Klingons coming. And there's no need for us to be worried. We don't need your help. And you can leave.
I was just going to say, this scene is... it had been a while since I had watched any old series Trek. Mm-hmm. And this was the first thing I watched in a long time. And this scene was just... To me, it was Captain Kirk being very Captain Kirk-y. He's like, he's got that stagey orator thing going on. He's speechifying to the Organians, and then later he's, you know, mouthing off to the Klingons and stuff. And this is where we get the "I'm a soldier, not a diplomat" line. So I'm kind of like,
That's right. He is being a little pushy. And he is hectoring them and kind of yelling at them and saying, with us, you'll have choices. But with the Klingons, you don't have any. But basically, he's not going to take no for an answer because he wants to protect these people. But really, his goal is to protect the Federation. So one assumes that this planet would join the Federation, and then they would get all the protections that Federation planets get. And he mentioned something about improving the planet and giving them medicine and all kinds of things.
And schools, and this is where he says, you know, we can remake your world, to which my eyes kind of bulged out of my head a little bit. I was like, what?
Well, he's given the hard sell. I don't know if that would convince me. Oh, great. Yes, please. take our planet and make it into your likeness. That sounds much better than what the Klingons are going to do.
True. Although in the midst of this, we get Spock coming in and revealing that this planet actually is just in a state of arrested culture, arrested development, and they haven't changed in tens of thousands of years, which is very mysterious.
It is.
And doesn't really seem, you know, Kirk is kind of, he's a little bit weirded out by that, but it doesn't seem to affect him very much because he kind of just goes right back to arguing with the Orcanians.
That's right.
And being like, no, really, the Klingons are coming.
Have I mentioned the Klingons are coming? We don't have time. And that scene was funny because the Organians are like, okay, Captain Kirk, we'll consider your options. Give us a moment in private. And so he says, okay. And he walks 2 feet away and looks at the wall. And then Spock immediately comes in. So I thought, maybe a little more privacy, Captain Kirk. Just go in the corridor maybe while they're pondering this huge decision. But no, he wants to be there. And just as they decide that, no, really, we're happy the way we are, Captain Kirk, thank you once again for the offer, but we're good. They find out, Sulu communicates down that the Klingons have arrived.
Yes, and then Captain Kirk says, oh, if you'd have just listened to me. And at that point, I'm like, really? There's been 5 minutes. If they would have said, yeah, sure, come on over, would that have really made any of a difference? Maybe not even 5 minutes.
It was like 3 minutes, I think, of them talking. The Federation moves really fast, though. So if you... they don't have a lot of bureaucracy. So once you agree, they just shoot beams of improvement upon your planet. And then things happen. It's like they have a Genesis project. They shoot that down there. Remakes the whole planet.
Roger.
I think that's my assumption. And so they find out the Klingons have arrived. But one of the counselors turns and says, the Klingons have arrived before Spock can tell them, which is unusual.
Mm-hmm.
But Captain Kirk, again, doesn't really seem to care that they can know this. Mm-hmm. And then they find out that, well, the Enterprise hightails it out of there because Sulu's following orders. And then the counselor once again says, oh, several hundred Klingons have beamed down to the planet.
And that's when Kirk and Spock are like, wait, how can he know this? Is this true?
Right, and then Spock does something and says, yep, it's true. I don't know how he knows, but he does. Mm-hmm. So the Organians say, all right, the Klingons are here, Spock and Kirk. We need to give you some backstory or something. So Kirk, luckily, we look exactly like you do, so you can just pretend to be an Organian, one assumes, although he does a really bad job at it. And
yeah.
His name is Bariner. And
Barona.
Barona, something like that.
Yes. Yeah, and actually, now that I just had the thought that you said, you know, luckily Captain Kirk looks just like them, luck probably had nothing to do with it. They probably made themselves in his image.
Exactly. The big reveal is that they can do that. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. And I don't worry about spoilers in this show, clearly, because the whole point of the show is that we walk through the episode. So at this point, if you don't want spoilers about this episode, you're listening
you're in the
to
wrong
the
place.
Wrong place. Exactly. What's wrong with you? And so Spock, obviously, is a Vulcan. He does not look like the Organians. So he's going to be a Vulcan merchant, which apparently is not uncommon.
Yes, he's trading in Kivas and Trillium.
That's right. Which I looked up to see what Kivas and Trillium were. And there is no mention of Kivas anywhere ever again in this episode, except in Star Trek, except in the Trials and Tribulations episode of Deep Space Nine, in which a Klingon who is pretending to be a human says that he is a traitor in Kivas and Trillium.
Well done, writers. Well
exactly.
done.
So 2 points for that, I think. Mm-hmm. But I have no idea what Kivas is, so just imagine something Vulcan. Mm-hmm. Vulcanian, I suppose.
There you go.
And so once they get these cover stories down, and they slip into Organian garb, which involve Uggs, apparently.
They look so comfy.
They do look very comfy and very warm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is like the most laid-back, loungy planet when it comes to fashion. I'm a fan.
It's a very chill planet all around. Nobody's freaking out. There's a lot of smiling going on. Everybody's pretty happy. Except, of course, Kirk is not happy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Klingons, we see the invasion force march in, which consists of maybe 10 Klingons marching into the square. And Kor comes into the council room and says, basically, you are under our rule. this Vulcan is probably a Federation spy, so we're going to force him to go through our mind sifter to figure mm-hmm. out if we can, get any of his secrets. And you, Barona, seem to be a man more like that I can deal with, because Kirk is very unhappy. All the other Organians are just smiling and just saying, welcome to the planet. You could do whatever you want. We don't really care. Kirk is like...
he's so bad at hiding.
He is pretty much going to punch him in the face, core of the face, but he doesn't. He just gets angry. And when they're about to take Spock out, he's like, no, don't take him out. And Core's like, why not? And he's like, well, he's my friend, and I don't want to see anything bad happen to him. Also, I found odd that Kirk takes a fake name. Spock just identifies himself as Spock.
Yeah, I wondered if that maybe Spock is a really common name on Vulcan, so it was just not a problem. I don't know.
It's not an uncommon Vulcan name, apparently. But I thought it was very strange that you just come up with another name, Spock. It's not that hard. You're very intelligent.
No, I mean, is the idea that Captain Kirk is just so gosh darn famous that everybody's going to recognize his name?
But I mean, not what he looks like?
Right. I mean, Kirk is not an uncommon, at least now, not an uncommon guy name. Maybe in the future it is. I don't know.
Who knows? I do find it odd that they don't... So Captain Kirk is... fairly famous in the future there in Star mm-hmm. Trek. So I find it odd that the Klingon commander doesn't recognize Captain Kirk or Spock. But he doesn't. So suspension of disbelief. And off they go to sift through Spock's mind to see if they can't uncover the obvious chicanery that's going on here. Mm-hmm. But they don't, because Spock has a very disciplined mind. Because
he's awesome. That's why.
Awesome. It's
Spock
true.
Is the best.
Spock is, you will get no arguments here. Spock is, in fact, the best. And he resists the Klingon infiltration of his mind. And, in fact, a Klingon compliments Spock's structured thoughts, which was nice. Mm-hmm. and I should mention, in case, for those who have not seen these original series episodes, this is the first appearance of Klingons. These Klingons do not look like the Klingons that you may be familiar with. They are dark-skinned, and they do have dark hair. They do not have the Klingon forehead ridges.
No.
Those came later.
Yes, they did. We should give another shout-out to Trials and Tribulations, where they yes. say, why did you guys used to look so different? We don't like to talk about it.
That's right.
That's the best explanation of continuity change, I think, ever. I think attacking something head-on is usually a mistake, and just kind of hand-waving it away is sometimes the best way to go.
And Worf grumpily waves it away, which is great, but sadly, in Star Trek Enterprise, they do, in fact, explain
oh,
it.
Oh, no.
Really? I won't give the explanation because it's stupid, but...
Okay. See, I didn't know that, so... you've darkened my day just a wee little bit.
Well, blame Enterprise, not me. I'm just the messenger.
Fair enough.
And also another shout out, I should say. So Kor is wearing a very attractive sash.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That, in fact, is the exact sash that Worf wears in the first couple of seasons of The Next Generation. So a little continuity.
I did not know that.
Sash continuity.
I like it.
I don't know why. I've never understood why Worf was wearing a sash. I don't know why Kor is wearing a sash, but he is, I guess, Klingon fashion. Nobody else in his team is wearing a sash, but maybe back on the starship, everybody's wearing a sash. Mm-hmm. Or it's a signifier of rank. I don't know. I'm no Klingon.
Maybe it's a family thing.
Oh, that is
true. A clan something honorific thing.
I hadn't thought of that.
We're just making stuff up at this point.
Well, we had to explain the sash. It's important. It's mm-hmm. critical to this episode.
I mean, it's so gold and shiny. It clearly means something important.
It does. And he looks good in it. So that's probably why he has it. Mm-hmm. So Kirk and Spock decide that they must resist this invasion, even if the Organians don't seem to care. So mm-hmm. Kirk comes up with this idea that they will blow up an ammo dump that's right outside of Kor's headquarters.
Mm-hmm. Because blowing things up is always the best plan. Yes. What? I like that they jump straight to sonic grenade with a delayed action fuse.
That's right. Which my wonder there is, they specifically say delayed action fuse, but apparently they set it for 6 seconds so that they can get maybe 10 feet away before this huge explosion happens.
It's more exciting that way.
It is more exciting that way, but it would seem like maybe, you know, give yourself 2 minutes even mm-hmm. just to get around the corner, but no. And it blows up, and the Klingons are none too pleased. And the Organians, more importantly, are none too pleased about this as well. And so Kirk and Spock head back to the council chamber and explain that they've blown this ammo dump up. The Organians are like, oh, you shouldn't have done that. We abhor violence. So give us your phasers. And they take them away. Or they took them away, I guess, before. But then they scold Spock and Kirk. Mm-hmm. And then we find out the Klingons are treacherous and they have bugged the chamber room.
They're listening.
They're listening in. So Kor and his minions arrive and cart Spock and Kirk off to jail. Not before Kor basically says, I really like Captain Kirk. I don't like you Organians, but...
Yes. He's pretty upset. He says, always it's the brave ones who die, the soldiers. I hope you continue to savor the sweetness of your life. You disgust me.
Yes.
I was like, holy cow.
He does not like Organians one bit. And this is the point at which he finds out that Captain Kirk is Captain Kirk and that Spock is Spock.
The Spock.
Because he does immediately. He says, oh, you're Captain Kirk. That must mean that you're his first officer. And I'm like, well, if you knew who his first officer was, how did you not identify him when he had no costume and he gave you his real name? But he didn't. So like you said, maybe Spock is just Vulcan for Bob or something. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, just another Vulcan named Spock. But so they cut him off to jail. Sadly, because they are troublemakers, and Kor wants Kirk to tell him all about... Well, actually, they send Spock off to jail, and Kor takes Kirk back to his office so they can have a chat about stuff. And they are...
And a drink.
And a drink. Oh, that's true. Well, Kirk refuses to drink, but Kor offers him a drink of, one assumes, clear Klingon blood wine. Although the Klingon culture has not been that established yet in this episode.
No.
But I just like to think that it's Klingon blood wine. And so Kirk obviously refuses to give any details to his enemy. Kor is unhappy and threatens to dissect Spock and to use his mind sifter on Captain Kirk to rip out all of his memories, which will then leave him as a vegetable. He says, okay, you have 12 hours to make your decision, which seems like a rather arbitrary number.
I thought about that, too. I was like, I mean, why not less time? Let's get this over with. But whatever. I have to say, I really like the chemistry between Kor and Kirk. They're both sort of cut from the same cloth a little bit. And, you know, Kor is talking about how he has a certain admiration for Starfleet and he thinks the Federation is much like the Klingons, of course. And Kirk says, no. Yes, no. You know, we don't have anything in common. And Kor is talking about, no, not minor ideological differences. You know, we're right,
like similar, democracy.
Similar species, you know, we're tigers and, you know, surrounded by lambs. That's what makes us both great, which is kind of ironic when you think about the episode overall, but it makes for a good scene.
And they do have great chemistry, and Kor is a great character. And Kirk, I think it slowly dawns on him. This is a very bellicose Kirk in this episode. He's itching for a fight. And I think he hates, like I said before, he hates the Klingons. And now he's realizing as he is interacting with a Klingon that what Kor is saying is ringing a little true. In that he is, like, really itching to fight. And obviously the Klingons are always itching to fight.
I honestly think that this is the root of why Kirk has this just irrational hatred. Because he sees so much of himself in the enemy. And that kind of thing does have a tendency to make people, you know, get their back up a little bit. So I think it's... Maybe they didn't mean it to be such a deep... psychological look at Captain Kirk, but I think maybe they did. I think this episode seems far more self-aware than I remembered original Star Trek being. So
yes, and because I was thinking about this as we were watching the episode for the podcast, because when you get right down to it, it's a pretty simple story and a pretty simple episode. They're not even in space for this episode, right? So it's very simple. Mm-hmm. Nothing too crazy is going on, but it has a lot of different layers. And it really gives you a glimpse into how Kirk, as a character, is thinking about things and how he reacts and kind of his psychology. And it sets up a whole lot of other stuff for the rest of Star Trek. So it's a super important episode.
It is.
It's like a layer cake of awesomeness, apparently.
Yes. I like that.
Yeah. So Kirk says, no way, Kor. You're a Klingon. I'm not cooperating. Do your worst. And so Kor, as we said, says, all right, well, in 12 hours, I will do my worst. But until then, I'm tossing you in the jail. Oh, and I should, I guess I missed a critical plot point. When the Klingons burst into the council chamber, Kor says, okay, I'm going to, you know, rip your memories out so I can figure out who you are. The Organians say, oh, don't worry. I'll tell you who he is. That's Captain Kirk. He's from Starfleet. He's, you know, your sworn enemy. And Kirk is shocked that he's been betrayed. But then, fast forward to after they have their little tete-a-tete, he goes to jail. Kirk immediately tries to figure out a way to break out of jail, and Spock assures him that he's already tried and that there's no way to get out.
The walls are very thick.
There are a Klingon guard every 2 feet. So even if they got out, they would be surrounded by Klingons. And then maybe 30 seconds later, the door opens and in comes the Organians to free him. And Kirk is very confused by this whole thing.
He's like, why should I trust you? You just turned me over to these guys. Now you want me to go with you. And he's like, well, Aelborn says, you know, do you really have any choice? And I'm like, well, true. Guess you're right. Let's go.
Yeah. And Aelborn makes the point that, you know, they're going to do harm to you and we are against violence. So come back to the council chamber and we'll figure this out. And Kirk is like, well, why should we go? That's the first place they're going to look for us. To which Aelborn says, don't worry. They will not find us. Kirk's like, okay. So they go to the council chamber. They do not get found out. Kor finds out that they have escaped, and he is very unhappy, although the person reporting to him assures him that the guards never left their posts. They didn't see anything. They were just, they had fed them, and then they went to check on them again, and they weren't there. So what the heck
is
going on?
Nice that they fed them so quickly.
Well, you know, it takes a lot of energy arguing about these things and having a war, so.
True.
Klingons are, all in all, they're not too bad of an occupation force when you think about it. We have heard from Kirk's view that they are horrible, but they seem to treat Kirk and Spock pretty well, all things considered. I mean, they're still, you know, occupying the planet and things,
right.
So that's
bad.
But
they do say that they'll kill anybody who, you know, makes the steps out of line the tiniest bit.
And they do, in fact, kill 200 Organians because the Federation officers have escaped. So there is that small fact. But ignoring these things, they're not that bad. And Kor makes an announcement. They immediately kill 200 Organians, and he says, we'll do that every 2 hours until you give us back our prisoners.
And again, every 2 hours just seems like every... Well, maybe that's how long they need to clean up all the bodies.
That's true. They don't have a lot of manpower. So they only have maybe, you know, 10 or 15 Klingons in total on this planet. So it's a lot of bodies to move. So Kirk does the obvious, and he says, well, let's plan a suicide mission to attack Kor and save the Organians. The Organians don't want to give them the phasers back, but Kirk is like, come on.
Yeah, he is really, really condescending to the Organians. I mean, it's the sort of classic imperialism come to the front. Like, you know, we are better than you are because you're not willing to stand up for yourselves.
That's right. You're sheep. You don't care for your freedom.
They get called sheep a lot in this story.
They do. And so they're like, okay, fine. We'll give you your phasers. They are hidden, in fact, in the only place in this room that phasers could be hidden, the one cabinet in the corner.
Yep.
And he's like, okay, they're not even locked. They're just in there. So he goes and gets them. And this is another, as I'm watching these with a more critical eye, I notice some interesting editing choices. And it seems they focus in on the cabinet for like 30 seconds, which just seems like a long time to be focused on a piece of furniture. And then they open it up and the phasers are in fact in there. But
That editing actually confused me as to the layout of the room. For some reason, I was thinking that cabinet was behind the table, and it turns out it was kind of more across the room. And
it's in a little alcove over there.
Yes, so I was a little bit thrown off by that myself.
It was very strange. I guess they just needed to fill in like 30 seconds of time. Like, okay, just
that's how much
in.
Time it took him to walk all the way across the room to the alcove to get it.
That is, yes, that would make sense. But still makes it all the more strange. So now, armed with their phasers, Kirk and Spock are going to get, strike a
blow for the good guys.
For the good guys, exactly. And for the Organians, who everybody hates at this point.
Yes.
Kirk and Spock, well, Kirk mostly is disgusted by them. Kor hates them. He likes Kirk and Spock. but Kirk feels it's his duty to he basically wants to beat up a bunch of Klingons, let's be honest. So he goes in and they assault the headquarters. They decide that they aren't going to kill any Klingons between getting to the outside and to Kor's office. They're just going to stun people.
This is what makes them the good guys, because exactly. The Klingons killed 200 people and they're just going to stun them. And they're clearly, you know, big damn heroes because they're trying to go in and do all this, even though the odds against them are 7,824.7 to 1.
And even though the Organians, whose planet they're on, do not want their help.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they're going to do it anyway, because, as I've said in another podcast, Captain Kirk thinks your society is stupid. So he's going to fix it.
Yep.
So they assault. They get in fairly easily after stunning two guards and choking another one until he tells them where Kor's office is, and then...
Yeah, which is another interesting point as far as not exactly having the Klingon race completely fleshed out as a character sort of species. I feel like the later Klingons would have, you know, such great honor that they... to give up information and, you know, to save their lives, that would be a terribly dishonorable thing to do. But here, there's nothing made of it. It's just a guy wants to save his own life, so he says, yeah, it's down the hall, and then they put him to sleep.
And everything's fine. Yeah, I think that obviously there are many, many, many more episodes than feature Klingons that really flesh out the Klingons. Mm-hmm. And I read a little snippet, DC Fontana, who's one of the original series writers and a woman, who some people don't know, but it's Dorothy, I think. She said that they use the Klingons more often than the Romulans, even though she thought the Romulans were a much more interesting alien race because the Klingons didn't require makeup. And so it was cheaper to use them. Which I thought was interesting. So that's why we have so many Klingons around. So Kirk and Spock penetrate the inner sanctum of Kor's office, where Kor's hanging out, and they basically tell him, hey, you know, cut this out. We don't like what you're doing. Kor has kind of a little monologue where he talks about, you know, war, what is it good for, all that stuff. And then he points out that, you know, the Klingon Empire, everyone's constantly under surveillance, and much like my office is currently under surveillance. And just as he says that, a bunch of Klingon warriors come in. And it looks like our friends, Kirk and Spock, are in big trouble.
Yep.
But they're not. Because all of a sudden, the
Klingons... Until craziness happens.
This is a very strange resolution to this episode. All of their weapons get super hot, and they throw them on the floor because they can't handle them.
I think maybe the best, as far as just the part that made me smile the biggest part of this episode, was when you don't actually know yet that the weapons are all 350 degrees. Suddenly, the Klingons, they bust in through the door, and you see, you know, Kirk and Spock starting to raise their phasers, and everybody basically flips their weapons right out of their hands all at the same time and throw up their hands, limbs akimbo, going, oh my gosh, what just happened? And you don't have any idea until it's explained, but just for that moment, yeah, I'm just like baffled.
Everyone's had some kind of big spasm or something. Mm-hmm. But no, the Organians come in and they say, your weapons you will find are non-functional. We've made them 350 degrees hot for some reason, instead of just making them non-functional. Well, you know, we're Organians. We can do this. Also, your fleets are both within communications range, and you will find that their weapons have been disabled in much the same manner. I will give you a moment to confirm. And so Kirk calls up to Sulu. Entertaining scene. All the buttons apparently on the Enterprise have gotten super hot, and so everyone leaps away from their consoles. And Sulu confirms that in fact they cannot use anything because everything is hot.
And then everything just completely shuts down, yeah, and they have no power to their phasers.
All the power's off, the same thing is happening in the Klingon fleet. The Organians say, I am here talking to you, but I am also, at the same time, on both of your home worlds, talking to your governments, telling them that basically, if you don't stop this war, we're going to disable all of your weapons, and all of your armies will be adrift. So, act right, basically.
And I find it very interesting how Kor and Kirk both basically they're throwing the same hissy fit. They have exactly the same reaction, mm-hmm. the sort of how dare you, what gives you the right to, you know, what happens in space is none of your business.
That's right. How dare you come into our war uninvited and stop it when we were just coming onto your planet uninvited and trying to take over.
Yep.
We just wanted to kill millions of people using your planet as a base of operations. I don't see the problem. To which the Organians then point out that Captain Kirk is in fact arguing in favor of having a gigantic war. He becomes chagrined after he realizes that, because he was blinded by his insane hatred of the Klingons.
Yep. I actually quite like the direction of that scene. You get a number of close-ups, and some of the cuts are a little choppy, but I like the close-up on Captain Kirk as Aelborn is explaining this to him, and, mm-hmm. and his face. I mean, William Shatner is actually quite a good actor when it comes right down to it, as long as he's sort of cast in the right roles, I think. And it's nice to see the change come over his face, where he's just sort of realizing, oh, this is what I was thinking. These guys are right. Chagrin is the perfect word for it.
Yes. Damn them.
And then, you get a close-up on Spock as well. And Spock's face is just like, yep, that about says it.
Okay. That's what I was thinking the whole time, but I didn't want to say anything. In my notes, I have in all caps, super close-up of Kor.
Yeah, he's just angry.
He is angry Klingon. He is unhappy. He is not. His thoughts are not changed, despite the fact that they point out he's arguing for war. He's kind of like, yeah, that's what we do. And so the war is averted because the Organians basically don't want it to happen. They reveal that, in fact, they are not what they seem to be. Mm-hmm. They are made of pure energy and can appear in any form they like, which leads then, as Erica pointed out earlier, they probably just picked humanoid form after they saw Kirk and Spock beam down. I guess they had a 50-50 chance they went with human. Cause it's
or cheaper. maybe because they seemed to be able to know a lot of things, they were able to tell that most of the people on the ship above the planet were humanoid.
That's
and
true.
Went with that. Apparently they can see the future as well, because you get the cryptic line, in the future, you and the Klingons will become fast friends. You will work together.
And Kor says, never! but crisis is averted. The war is over. Captain Kirk and Spock beam up to the Enterprise. The guy wearing the blue jumpsuit appears again in the background, so look out for him. And then Kirk has a short monologue in which he is sad because, in fact, humans are not the most powerful species in the universe.
I do like that he admits that he's actually embarrassed, because he was thinking, you know, that they were strutting around as the ruling the roost, and realized, oh yeah, maybe we're not quite. What did Spock say, that they are to humans as humans are to amoebas?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so Captain Kirk has learned an important lesson in this episode. Although I feel like, and I didn't look at what other episodes had happened before this one, but I feel like they have, you know, they've encountered beings that are much more powerful than they are. So it seems like Captain Kirk should have learned this lesson ahead of time. But no
matter what. Sometimes, you know, I used to be a trainer, and I've learned that you really do need to teach the same lessons 2 or 3 times before people get it. Well, so he's just a typical human.
Sure. And once again, we can explain away a lot by his hatred of Klingons clouding his judgment. Because this guy really does not like Klingons. And we come back to that later in many episodes and movies. Of course, the Klingons then kill his son eventually, so that gives him an even more of a reason to hate the Klingons. But he doesn't start off at a point where he's like, Klingons, they're kind of okay.
Or if he did, we didn't see it.
That's right. That's way before the series begins. And that is Erin of Mercy. So what did you think of this episode overall, Erica?
I really quite liked it. Like I said, it had been a long time since I had seen any classic Trek, so I was very pleased to jump back in with this one. Captain Kirk, sometimes he's fun and I like him, and I can understand why people find him their favorite captain, but sometimes he irks me. And in this episode, he's doing a lot of the things that irk me, just the condescension and the, as you said, thinking your planet is stupid, so I want to fix it. And I shake my head at that a little bit. And I love that the story really just, his face just gets smushed right into it. Like, oh, whoops, I was completely wrong. He totally has to eat crow at the end of it. And I can't help but smile a little bit at that.
This whole episode is constructed, and that is to basically make Captain Kirk eat crow at the end. That is the whole point of this. If you were to take away a lesson from this episode, it would be, you know, don't assume that others Don't judge a book by a cover, I suppose, which is kind of a cliche thing, but it is an important thing. And to respect all people's societies, except Klingons, because they're jerks.
Which, and I have to really give credit to the show at this time to, you know, you're in the first season, 27 episodes in, and you're basically, like we said, making the main character, the hero, recognize that he was completely wrong this whole time. And that's kind of a bold move.
Yes, and not just a tiny bit wrong, but his whole premise is completely and grossly wrong. He is going down the wrong track completely. He's basically doing exactly what he doesn't want the Klingons to do, and he figures that out at the end, which is nice. And then he never does it again. No, that's not true. He does it all the time. That's why we love Captain Kirk.
Yes.
Well, Erica, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Actually, I'm very, very glad to have finally been able to talk about this one, because you'd asked me a while ago, a few weeks back, if I wanted to come on and talk about this story. And then shortly after that, I was asked to contribute an essay or a piece for a book of essays about Star Trek that's going to be coming out for in time for the 50th anniversary. And it's being edited by a friend of mine, Robert Smith. Robert Smith question mark. He has a question mark in his name. And it's going to cover, I believe, all of the Kirk stories. So all of the original Star Trek plus the animated series episodes. And because I had already agreed to do this with you, I had Errand of Mercy on the mind. So I said, hey, can I write about Errand of Mercy? And he was like, sure, nobody else has got it. So that's why I mentioned I had seen this episode like four times in the last few months. So it's almost to the point where, you know how you say a word over and over again so many times, it starts to lose all meaning? I've almost got to that point with this episode. So I'm kind of glad that we have now talked about it and I can put it to bed for a while.
You could move on to other episodes of Star Trek, or maybe, I was going to say Deep Space Nine, but Babylon 5 is what I meant to say.
Yes. But yeah, so anybody who is interested in reading about the Star Trek worlds, keep your eyes out for this book, which as of yet has no title, as far as I know.
Well, once it has a title and some kind of link, I will promote it in some way related to Random Trek, so people can check out that essay that you've written. Well, thank you so much for being on Random Trek, the podcast that, in fact, has no sign-off. Next on Random Trek, Voyager's 1159.